Good morning. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Not long ago, I read three different times from a book that I just love called Eager, The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter. And what a great book that is. The author is Ben Goldfarb. Well, he's written a new book. The book is called Crossings, How Road Ecology is Shaping the Future of Our Planet. I'm going to start reading the introduction today. The Wing of the Swallow. If you've ever driven across the United States of America, you have passed beneath the wings of a plucky songbird, smaller than your palm, light as your pocket change, feathered in jaunty blue and umber, called the cliff swallow. Where other animals flee the human footprint, cliff swallows shelter in its tread. They should properly be called the bridge swallow, for our steel spans have furnished it with more nesting sites than bluffs and canyons ever did. Once a bird of the western mountains, in the last century, cliff swallows have spread into the Great Plains and across them, plastering their gourd-shaped mud nests to girders and trusses, feats of avian engineering no less impressive than our own viaducts. Once the environment is ruined, a biologist named Charles Brown told me, all we have left is rats, cockroaches, and cliff swallows, unquote. Cliff swallows are gregarious birds whose colonies can number in the thousands. Like most civilizations, theirs are messy. They steal nests, bully others into mating, fight so viciously that they sometimes tumble into rivers and drown. For the last four decades, Brown has paid annual visits to more than 200 nesting sites in Nebraska, trying to figure out what makes swallow societies thrive or fail. He has studied how well they catch insects, how they spread diseases, how they fend off snakes. He has captured more than 400,000 swallows in nets and encircled more than 200,000 slender legs with coated metal bracelets. Mostly what he has done is drive more miles than he can hazard from bridge to bridge, colony to colony. Quote, 98% of cliff swallows in western Nebraska are going to be within 50 feet of a road, Brown said. Near a road, of course, is the most dangerous place an animal can live, and swallows, for all their agility, occasionally fall victim to passing cars and trucks. When Brown and his longtime collaborator, the ornithologist Mary Bomberger Brown, began studying swallows in the 1980s, they picked up these casualties, wings broken and heads crushed, and brought them to their lab. They dressed the bodies, replacing eyes and viscera with cotton, lacing up feathered breasts like shoes, and tucked them in a drawer. They didn't have any plan for the birds, it just seemed proper. The waste of death diminished by the salvage of data. Years passed. The number of publications mounted. The swallows flourished. In 2012, a new assistant asked Brown to teach him the art of dressing birds. Brown promised there would be plenty of roadkill on which to practice. When summer arrived, though, there was virtually no roadkill to be found, just empty asphalt and swallows gloriously alive, taunting the vehicles below. The epiphany hit Brown like an 18-wheeler. This was not a single summer fluke. Swallow roadkill had been dwindling for years. He'd collected 20 dead birds in 1984, when the project began, and 20 more in 1985 and 86. Then the trend line slanted downward, straight as a ski slope. 15 in 1989, 13 in 1991, 8 in 2002. By 2011, the toll had dropped to 4. Brown considered various explanations and then dismissed them. There weren't fewer swallows to be whacked or more vultures bearing away carcasses, nor was there less traveling on his part. No, Brown thought, somehow swallows had become harder to kill. He found his answer in the corpses themselves. when he stretched the tape measure from the bird's shoulders to their outermost feathers, he found the car-struck swallows had longer wings than the average birds he snared in his nets. The difference was slight, no more than a few millimeters, but the gap had unmistakably grown over the years. Brown immediately understood the significance. Long wings were good for straight, lengthy flights between nests and feeding grounds, for example. Shorter wings were better for maneuverability, for performing the tight pivots and rolls which a swallow would evade a falcon or a flatbed hauling a load of lumber to Omaha. Traffic was weeding clumsier, long-winged swallows from the population and favoring their nimbler, short-winged flockmates. It was Darwinian selection in action, so clean and rapid it belonged in a textbook. Morphologically, these are not the same birds anymore, Brown said, but it seemed to me they were also different in some deeper, more metaphysical sense. Centuries ago, before we paved North America, cliff swallows had existed largely beyond human influence. Now, they were so enmeshed in our world that our infrastructure had infiltrated their DNA. Cliff swallows were a success story, rare beneficiaries of concrete and steel. Yet their triumph had come at a cost to the long-winged martyrs culled from the population and to the birds' altered genes themselves. Cliff swallows had survived, but as a changed thing, they had been shaped subtly but intimately by the road. When alien archaeologists exhume the rubble of human civilization, they may conclude that our raison d'etre was building roads. Some 40 million miles of roadways encircle the earth, from the continent-spanning Pan-American Highway to the 100,000 miles of illegal logging routes that filigree the Amazon. Our planet is burdened by 3,000 tons of infrastructure for every human, nearly a third of an Eiffel Tower per person. Roads predate the wheel. Mesopotamian builders began laying mud brick paths in 4,000 BCE, centuries before anyone thought to drop a chariot onto a couple of potter's discs. Today it's impossible to imagine life without the asphalt arteries that connect goods with markets, employees with jobs, families with each other. E.B. White wrote, "Everything in life is somewhere else, and you get there in a car." Roads are both logistical essentials and cultural artifacts. They epitomize freedom, the architecture of our restlessness, per Rebecca Solnit, and the two lanes that take us anywhere, per Bruce Springsteen. To us, roads signify connection and escape. To other life forms, they spell death and division. Sometime during the 20th century, scientists have written, "Roadkill surpassed hunting as, quote, the leading direct human cause of vertebrate mortality on land," unquote. Name your environmental ill, dams, poaching, megafires, and consider that roads kill more creatures with less fanfare than any of them. More birds die on American roads every week than were slain by the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, with the road deaths accompanied by a fraction of the hand-wringing. And it's only getting worse as traffic swells. A half century ago, just 3% of land-dwelling mammals met their end on a road. By 2017, the toll had quadrupled. It has never been more dangerous to set paw, hoof, or scaly belly on the highway. Roads distort the planet in other more insidious ways. No sooner was Rome's Via Cassia completed around 100 BCE than its surface began to shed sediment into Lago di Monterossi, spawning algal blooms that permanently distorted the lake's ecosystem. Phytophthora lateralis, an invasive fungus that attacks cedar trees, hitchhikes on the patterns of truck tires. the little red fire ant, a merciless insect, notorious for stinging the eyes of elephants, has exploited logging tracks to spread through Gabon 60 times faster than it would have otherwise. Pavement itself blankets less than 1% of the United States, yet its influence, the road effect zone, to use ecological jargon, covers a full 20%. Park your car on the shoulder and bushwhack half a mile into the woods, and you'll still see fewer birds than you would in an unroaded wilderness. Hike 2 miles more, and you'll still see fewer mammals. If you're a Kerouac reader, you grew up steeped in the dogma that highways represent freedom. If you're a grizzly bear, they might as well be prison walls. The repercussions of roads are so complex that it's hard to pinpoint where they end. British Columbia's caribou herds have dwindled to furtive bands, in part because logging and mining roads have permitted the ingress of wolves, a human-caused disaster disguised as natural predation. Nearly a fifth of America's greenhouse gas emissions are coughed out by cars and trucks, and the transportation sector is the fastest-growing contributor to climate change. Meanwhile, the rise of electric vehicles, whose batteries depend on lithium and other metals, has catalyzed a mining boom that threatens to disfigure landscapes in places as disparate as Chile, Zimbabwe, and Nevada. Even habitat loss, the most thorough eraser of wildlife, is a road problem. Before you can log Alaska's rainforests or convert Bornean jungles into oil palm monocultures, you need roads to transport the machinery in and the product out. Roads are, you might say, the routes of all evil. Yet roads select winners as well as losers. Arizona's highways funnel rainfall into ditches and thus soften desert soils for pocket gophers whose tunnels parallel the shoulder like subway lines. Vultures, ravens, and other cunning scavengers are ascendant, their diets subsidized by roadkill. Butterflies, whose prairies have been devoured by cornfields, find succor in unkempt strips of roadside milkweed. In Britain, such habitat is called the soft estate, a suggestion that roads are capable of creating new ecosystems, even as they shatter existing ones. A biologist once led me beneath a highway bridge to show me hundreds of little brown bats roosting in its crevices, seemingly unbothered by the traffic thumping overhead. Considering the outsized effects of roads, it's perhaps surprising that they didn't truly receive their scientific due until the late 20th century. One afternoon, in 1993, a landscape ecologist named Richard Foreman was standing in his Harvard office with a few students, admiring a satellite photograph of a forest. Foreman was expounding on the forest's features, where the water flowed, why people had put houses where they had, how the animals moved through it, when he paused, quote, "I noticed the long slice going diagonally across the image," he recalled to me. "It was a 2-lane road through the forest." I said, "Gee, we know a lot about the ecology of everything else in this image, but we don't know much about the ecology of that." Inspired by inattention, Foreman soon coined an English term, road ecology, defined loosely as the study of how life changes for plants and animals with a road and traffic nearby. He did not immediately attract disciples. When a major government committee invited Foreman to present his new field to transportation higher-ups the next year, he was met with polite laughter. Quote, "You're not here to make us stop running over animals, are you?" one engineer asked, cocking an eyebrow. As the 1990s wore on, though, road ecology gained steam. Foreman and other pioneers published papers, wrote textbooks, held conferences that lured curious officials. All of a sudden, Foreman said, it became mainstream. I'll stop here and continue next week reading this introduction to Crossings, How Road Ecology is Shaping the Future of Our Planet, by Ben Goldfarb. The beginning today mentions the lifetime of work on cliff swallows by Charles Brown and his late partner, Mary Bomberger Brown. There's a book they wrote about their work with the swallows called Swallow Summer. I highly recommend it. Brown was very helpful to me when I was gathering material for the kiosk in Gay's Mills that shows the life of these little long-distance migrants that nest below our bridges. And as is true of our author today, Ben Goldfarb, this book is loaded with new information and hope for the future and telling us stories about people who are working to remedy the ills that are presented by our roads. Next week, we will finish the introduction. And please visit WDRT.org to find all of my programs archived on the website. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.